B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy who will grant you a mulligan, but then remind you about it the whole ride home. Ask me how I know. Charlie Nance.
Welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at CLT underscore golf guy. This week, it's the Players Championship. You hear NBC and the Golf Channel go on and on. It's the fifth major. Just stop it. And also stop it with the Island Green 17th being the most famous hole in golf. It's not even the most famous par three in this country. That comes next month. At a major, in the heart of Amen Corner, the 12th hole at Augusta National. Now, it's not that I don't like the TPC. On the contrary, I've actually come around to think quite a bit of the track, especially the three-hole finish. But let's slow down a little bit with the over-the-top praise, huh? I mean, it's really good, but tap the brakes once or twice. Hey, before we dive into the TPC with John McGinnis, Ron Green Jr., and Ron Mintz, there's something else I wanted to mention. This week, there has been an incredible bribery scandal involving celebrities and a company that specialized, in illegal and expensive ways to get kids into prestigious colleges and universities. Among the names who use this service, one Phil Mickelson. That's right. The same Phil Mickelson who not long ago was greeted by the FBI on the 18th green at a tournament in regards to illegal insider trading. He was able to skate on that as the feds, honestly, wanted someone more than they wanted Phil. And he's probably going to skate on this too. The media will give him a pass. However, let me just say a couple of things to you. Number one, if you are to believe Phil that he had nothing to do with this and had no knowledge of this company's dealings, then you are saying, in the words of journalist Kevin Van Valkenburg, okay, Phil hired this very crooked company. But they were on the level with Phil's family, pushing pause on their crooked criminal schemes, which Phil was not familiar with. Really? Answer this question for me. How many times does Phil Mickelson have to be caught in association with sketchy people doing sketchy things before someone says, you know what? Phil Mickelson is just sketchy. Just saying. Anyway, let's get this ball rolling on TPC Week with SiriusXM, PGA Tour Radio, and PGA Tour Live's John McGinnis. John, let's start with the last couple of weeks on the PGA Tour. The Honda, we had a single-digit winner under par. Bay Hill, if Molinari doesn't go crazy on Sunday, we have a single-digit under par winner. It seems to me that all of a sudden the PGA Tour, at least the people who are cutting the grass on the PGA Tour, learned something from the Ryder Cup last year. If you'll grow out the rough a little bit and move the fairways in a little bit, the long ball sort of gets neutralized, yes?
Well, somewhat, sure. I mean, those two golf courses, as you just mentioned, not really bombers courses to begin with. I mean, 71 to 7,200 yards. But I love seeing the rough brought in. And you can actually go back to Mexico if you want. Of course, DJ shot 18 under. But he won by five over a guy who was five clear of the rest of the field. So other than two of them, it was single digits. I mean, I think the tour does a great job in varying what we see every week. I like 30 under par sometimes, and I like five under par sometimes. So I'm all for it. Now, as a player, I was fairly straight, and so I would have liked the narrow, thick, rough weeks. But I understand why you have both. And it certainly does bring out a certain type of player. And that type of player on that list right now is Francesco Molinari.
Let's talk about Francesco for a second. He is, to me, the classic definition of a streaky player. When he has a week where he's putting, he's such a great ball striker, and he's so straight that he's incredibly hard to beat. See Carnoustie and see last week. You were on that golf course all week, and you saw how tough Bay Hill was playing. At any time in those 4 days, did you see a 64 on that golf course?
No. especially on Sunday. I think that he's just a special kind of talent. I mean, don't forget the 5-0 in the Ryder Cup. I understand. Remember, Tiger was at the wrong end of most of those points. And from what I understand, I'm not sure. I haven't been to the Woods Jupiter in quite some time, but I think he took all the Italian food off the menu. I don't think you can get pasta there anymore.
That's terrible. That's terrible. Now, for people who haven't seen Molinari up close, how would you describe his game? Is there someone who you can make an analogy to, a comparison to?
Yeah, I can, but unfortunately, it's probably going to miss most of your listeners. But his golf swing reminds me of when KJ Choi came on tour.
Me too. Yes.
The balance and the strength and the ball striking, it's uncanny. And I think that there's a certain body type that can swing it like that. The ability to get the club that high on the backswing when you're only, you know, 5'9", is amazing. And then to do that with perfect balance is something to behold.
John McGinnis with PGAtour.com and the app and SiriusXM. McGinnis is everywhere. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Another player I want to ask you about from last week and really so far this season, it's sort of a head-scratcher. Rory McIlroy, putting himself in position a lot, gets to Sunday, and this is a guy who we know knows how to close the deal. He's got four major championships. John, what are you seeing, or is it just a case of on those Sundays he just doesn't have it?
Well, I think he played great in Mexico, finished second, but just DJ's the best player in the world, and he was playing his best. I don't know what happened to him on Sunday at Bay Hill. I expected him to shoot 68 and win the golf tournament. As it turns out, I don't know that 68 would have won the golf tournament. I'm not worried about Rory yet. If he starts to go away a little bit, then you might suggest that this run right here of near misses is affecting him the wrong way. But I think so far, so good. He's playing well. He needs one good putting week, and I think he wins by six that week, and then he's gone. He's going to win some golf tournaments. He's going to probably win three or four times.
And that way, is he sort of a longer version of Vijay Singh in his prime? Because, you know, Vijay, just the streakiest putter of all time. All of Vijay's major championships were weeks where he was able to putt and putt well, because the other times it was just sort of meh on the greens.
I never had any confidence watching Vijay putt, even when he was putting well. Even in 2004 when he won nine times, I watched him putt and thought, he's not going to make this. And I never had that look like he was going to make it. Now, Rory's putting is uninspiring at the moment, but I feel like when he stands over it, he's giving himself a good chance to make it. And he's hit a lot of good putts that aren't going in. Now, there's a will factor here. You know, Vijay was willing the ball in the hole, even with a mediocre stroke. For some reason, Rory's not willing the ball in the hole right now, but I believe he will.
I think the microcosm for me with Rory right now was the 16th hole at Bay Hill this last week, where I think he bombed it like 340 or 353. Yeah. He had an 8 or 9 iron in his hands to a par 5 and then 3-putted for par. And I just went, what are we looking at here? I mean, a standard single-digit handicap, if you give him 150 in on a par 5, is going to figure out a way to birdie the hole. It just is head-scratching to me.
I think that he 3-putted for par 4 times at Bay Hill. That's
painful. John McGinnis is our...
What are you going to do?
Oh, geez. John McGinnis is our guest taking Dead Aim. I want to talk to you about one of the best players in the world. He's got to be a favorite going into the Masters because he plays so well there. But he ballooned up to a 77 on Sunday, and it's going to lead to a broader discussion. Talking about Justin Rose, what I liked about hearing from Justin was how easily he was able to just brush off that 77. You and Robert Dameron on PGA Tour Live got into a great discussion. I think JT Poston was playing with Ricky Fowler. And once Ricky cooled off on Sunday, it turned from can Ricky make a run at the title to, as Dameron put it, an 80s watch on Poston because he just didn't have it that day. How are pro golfers able to just brush off an anomaly round like 77 or 80 or 82, whereas for everyone else in the golf world who considers himself a good golfer, that is crushing?
Well, I think you have to have the confidence to know that that was the anomaly and not the good play is not the anomaly. I think that's the biggest key. You know, 77 for Justin Rose is an anomaly. It's almost impossible. And he had a two-way miss going. I mean, he was just hitting it terribly.
Which is never Justin Rose.
No. So you have to figure he slept on the wrong side of the bed, ran into old friends and stayed out too late. I mean, I doubt that's the case. That would be irresponsible of Justin. That's the kind of thing I would do. But Justin is that kind of guy that he's a pro's pro. And he understands a statement that I heard David Duval make years ago, and that is the most important thing a PGA Tour player can do is protect his confidence. Nobody else can protect that for you. You have to protect it yourself. And so when he says, I'm just fine, I shot 77, we all have bad days, golf is hard, he's protecting his confidence. And that's a brilliant career decision.
You got into a great discussion with Robert Dameron on PGA Tour Live. I think it was on Sunday morning. I about fell out of my chair laughing, where you guys were talking about rounds in your career where it went south. I think Dameron said that he shot Ocho Cinco at Maui at Kapalua playing with Tiger Woods, which was just unbelievable. But you told a great story, since this is TPC week, about playing in the TPC with Sergio and Lynn Matisse. How did that go?
Well, I think it was 2000. So Sergio's, you know, a baby. He had just, you know, tried to run down Tiger 19 years old the year before and at the PGA Championship. And so it's me and Sergio and Lynn Matisse. And I get off, I think I made double or triple on the very first hole. And it didn't get much better after that. And I shot like 84, but I think Sergio shot maybe 82. Lenny, I believe, was in the top five, maybe 69 or 70. And I think he beat mine and Sergio's score, best ball, by about six shots.
Was this on day one or day two?
It was day one.
Day one. So what happens when you show up for day two? How do y'all look at each other? Is anything said?
Sergio and I laughed. I mean, you know, it didn't happen very often that I played so poorly that I couldn't make the cut the next day. You know, there was always, okay, I can shoot 5 under and make the cut.
Right.
But I think that day, you know, I was, 11 over, 10 over, 12 over, whatever. It was over with. It needed to end, and I felt like my job was just to stay out of Lenny's way that day.
Was there a possibility that Thursday night you were irresponsible before your second round?
No, I believe in 99, 2000, I was a new dad with a pregnant wife traveling with me.
Oh.
So I might have been sleep deprived, but not for all the fun reasons.
G-rated John McGinnis, no fun. John McGinnis with PGA Tour Radio, Sirius XM, and PGA Tour Live is our guest taking Dead Aim. TPC week, we moved the tournament back to March. There's a part of me that laughs because I remember the reason moving it from March was because of bad weather. It looks like they're going to get lucky this year and get good Florida weather. But sort of explain the differences between the two courses, because you played it when it was played in March. You've covered it when it was played in May. How different a TPC are we seeing this week?
Not much, I believe. I think a much different golf course. It's overseeded, so it's going to be very, very green. And I think that's the first thing that people will notice. It's going to be greener than what they're used to seeing at this golf course. It'll look a whole lot more like what they're going to see next month. It's also going to be a lot harder. Now, it's currently not firm and fast, but they can flip a switch, literally, and firm up the greens with the sub-air system. So they can do that, but it's also breezier, and the breeze comes from the northeast this time of year, which means on 17, sort of in and from the right. But is it in and from the right, or is it just from the right? Or it's really tough to tell. And I think the scores will be quite a bit higher.
Another shot where that north wind is going to affect is definitely the tee shot on 18. And this hole, to me, is very interesting. If you look around the PGA Tour, there's a couple of holes at Bay Hill last week that have this. The 18th hole where they've played the Houston Open the last dozen years or so looks like the 18th at Sawgrass. What is it about professional golfers and water on the left that causes this amazing bailout to the right when these guys are the best ball strikers in the world?
You know, I think that actually a fader has a better chance on those holes than a drawer for the righties, just because he can set it up at the water and know that it's going to work off of it. The draw is a much more difficult shot to control, and so it's pretty easy to not do something down at the bottom, like release. But because of the wind directions, like Rory, for example, was just taking it over all the water and hitting wedge into 18. And from what I understand, yesterday in the practice round, he laid it back because he had to, because there was no direction to go in, and had 6-iron in. So that's a massive difference.
Well, it's like Tiger. I think I caught his press conference this week, and Tiger said that last year in the fourth round, he hit 3-iron, 9-iron into 18. And in his practice round that day, he hit 3-wood, 4-iron into that green. And like you said, that's an enormous difference.
And I think we're going to see it all over the golf course. I do. And there have been some subtle changes. If you know the golf course, you'll be able to see them. Of course, all the broadcast entities will be more than happy to point them out to you. but it's a different animal. And there's only – I was surprised by this number and how low it was, because 2006 was the last time it was in March, but only 26 players in the field have actually ever played this tournament in March.
Now, did you think that number would be higher or lower? Because I saw that number too, and I said to myself, you know, I'm kind of surprised there's that many still doing it.
Yeah, I could see that side of it, but I also, you know, I played with so many of these guys that still, you know, they're still around. The guys that you wouldn't expect that I played with, like Kuchar or Kevin Na or, you know, Hunter Mahan. You know, those guys are, you know, guys that I actually played golf with. And so that number seemed a little low to me, but, 26 it is.
Get you out of here on this. You mentioned they can cut on the sub-air and firm things up on the greens. They can't firm up the fairways if they stay soft. Conditions, if firm greens, if slow in the fairways, are we looking at another single-digit, just barely double-digit under-par win, or can they take it deep?
I think it really depends on the breeze. I'm sitting outside here behind 17. Right now it's blowing 15 miles an hour. We get 15 miles an hour all week, and I think single digits, 10, 11, 12 under is a winner. All the par fives are reachable. You know, it's an interesting design feature that, you know, every one of the par fives is very reachable, so you get some opportunities. It's just a matter of avoiding disaster.
From SiriusXM, PGA Tour Radio and PGA Tour Live, that is the great John McGinnis. And when we return, back to Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida, as the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer's Ron Green Jr. takes dead aim at the TPC, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Hey there, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And back to TPC with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer's Ron Green Jr. Ron, before we get to what's going on at TPC and your expectations for this week, I want to talk a little bit about last week. This was the second week in a row. I mean, if Molinari hadn't gone nuts on Sunday, we would have had a single-digit under-par winner on the PGA Tour for 2 weeks in a row. And both weeks, if you looked at the golf course, it kind of reminded you of the setup of the Ryder Cup in Paris. Have the agronomists with the PGA Tour learned a little something that if you bring in the fairways a little bit and maybe up one notch on the mowers and the rough, that you'll keep these scores down?
They may be doing a little of that. I mean, shoot, Bay Hill's just a hard golf course. I mean, it's really hard. And around Molinari shot on Sunday was just, that's why he won. I mean, you go do that, that'll win you a golf tournament. And it was interesting. The thing that sort of jumped out at that tournament beyond, you know, not terribly low scores was nine of the top 10 there were not Americans. I mean, it was the ultimate sort of international leaderboard there, but it's, you know, conditions, weather and everything makes so much difference. I think, you know, I think they love to have good low scores in some places. I don't think Bay Hill is conducive to those. Now, here at the Players' Championship, if you get the right conditions, guys can really shoot low numbers. But when they get hard conditions, as we're expecting this weekend, watch how the scores go just the opposite.
I did not realize, and maybe it's because I've seen over the years, guys take it, you know, well into double digits deep at Bay Hill. Have they done something to that golf course to increase its difficulty? Because the last couple of years has been the first time I've really heard people talk about how difficult Bay Hill is.
Well, I remember when they first sort of made the major changes in that back however many years ago, guys really didn't like it because it was so difficult. I think in some ways it's sort of matured. I know they've tweaked it. I can't sit here and tell you specifically what they've done, but I think it's got a lot of really hard par fours. I mean, and that finish, I mean, the 17th hole, the par three, is so difficult. But there's so many holes that if you get it the slightest bit out of position off the tee, it's really, really hard going in there. You know, in some ways, like the South Course at Torrey Pines, you give yourself bad angles to tough greens, and it just limits your chances. And it's critical that you take advantage of the par fives there if you're going to shoot good scores. And, you know, you go back and that was a chance for Rory to win a golf tournament down there. But on Sunday, he parred the first three par fives, including one. He outdrove Matthew Fitzpatrick by 58 yards. And you're thinking, this is where Rory uses his advantage, but he let it slip. And, you know, Bay Hill gives you certain holes that if you don't take advantage, then you really struggle. But the greens got so firm down there by the end of the week, both afternoon, Saturday, and Sunday. It was crunchy on those greens, and guys were playing defense. In fact, Rory said, my plan became hit it 25 feet from the hole, and I putted so defensively because I was afraid of what might happen.
Yeah, you mentioned his driving the golf ball and Matthew Fitzpatrick. The 16th hole to me was incredible. I think he drove it 340-something or 350-something and had 158 or something into a par 5. So there's no way he had more than a light 8-iron into a par 5, and then he winds up taking par. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, you know, somebody putt for Rory. He's the greatest person you want in a scramble in the world for the first two shots, but will someone please putt for this guy?
Well, I believe he had a pitching wedge into that green is what he had.
Oh.
So, yeah, you know, I think he's putted all right. I think it sort of glares out when he doesn't make a few of them. But, you know, I don't think his putting is quite, you know, I go back to things like, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. What is the fourth hole where he drove it 58 yards by Fitzpatrick the first time? I mean, on the front nine, it's a par five. He's got an iron in there. Well, he misses that, short sides himself right, has to play it up a hill to a tough pitch, you know, to about 10 feet, and he makes par there. I mean, that's you hit that tee shot, then you waste the second shot going into one of the other par fives out there, he did something similar. He just, you know, he doesn't give himself the short, easy birdie putt. You know, you give yourself 12 footers all day long, you're going to make some of them, but you're not going to maybe make enough of them. And the, just little ragged things at the wrong time sort of got in his way, I think.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. You were out at Bay Hill all last week. You walked the course a bunch. You walked with a bunch of really good players who had some really good rounds. Did you see a 64 out there at any point?
Francesco Molinari saw it. I don't think he saw it coming, but he sure liked it when it rolled in there. That's a hard golf course. I mean, and that's the way you go win a golf tournament like that. I mean, and that's four wins in whatever, 10 months for him. And he just, you know, that confidence is so huge. We talk about it all the time. And it all sort of came flowing in there together. Granted, now you make whatever, that 45 footer on the 18th hole, that's an accident. But
right,
you have those kind of accidents of fortune when you play around like that and you win tournaments. You know, it's as simple as that sometimes. And, you know, that's certainly, I'd have to go ahead and give it my shot, but it's in the discussion for best round of the year right now.
I watched him win at Wentworth last year, of course, watched him win at Carnoustie and watched a lot of him on Sunday at Bay Hill. And he's got one of those golf swings that was looking so familiar to me. And I was like, God, where have I seen this before? Where have I seen this before? Had John McGinnis on. He said it. Does he not remind you of KJ Choi, the way his golf swing looks?
A little bit, because there's not a lot of wristy action to it. It's more sort of a big muscle swing and just sort of a clean, sort of tidy, you know, back and forth. And I think he reminds me, not so much swing, but I think he plays a lot golf a lot like Justin Rose, too. I just use the word tidy, which the Brits love. It doesn't look like it's work when he's hitting a shot. Some guys, you know, just feels like they're going at it so hard and just, you know, ripping at it, and he just nice and patient, sort of like a porch swing going back and forth, and you just, it looks, and from the outside looks so consistent and so repetitive that you wonder how it ever gets off.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. All right, let's turn our focus to what's going on this week at the Tournament Players Course at Ponte Vedra, TPC. At first look, it is stunningly green. To the point that you're like, Augusta Nationals people are going, man, it's really green at the TPC. Have they just put overseeding into overdrive in Jacksonville? That's some golf course.
Yeah, well, that's the way the golf course was built. The golf course was built to be played this time of year as an overseeded golf course. You know, when they were playing it in May, the Bermuda had not grown in fully. It was thinner and it just played differently. This is the way it's supposed to be. Yeah, and I mean, it's as green as Augusta. And that's, they could have had, they let the rough, they topped the rough off at 2.5 inches. They could have let it get to 4, which they've done in the past. And maybe as they get back into this March thing, they'll do that. But I mean, it looks fantastic. The whole place just looks perfect, pristine. And there's like a renewed energy here. I think while some people wanted them to stay in May, I think this is where the tournament belongs. It feels right now. It looks right. You got changeable weather conditions. I think it's just an overall home run.
Now, they originally moved it, and correct me if I'm wrong, the reason for its move was because of the iffy weather that you can get in March, specifically a ton of rain in North Florida. It looks like they're going to, you know, get a pass this year and do okay. If weather is bad in New York at the PGA, are you going to have a lot of hand-wringing and sort of Monday morning quarterbacking about making this move?
I don't think so, because I think you run the risk of an afternoon thunderstorms when you're playing in August. You know, the reality is weather's part of it, and sometimes you get good weeks. I mean, I've been at Augusta where it's just been miserable, and you wait all year for Augusta, you get down there and just a mud bath, and the rain comes and goes and comes and goes, and sometimes it happens that way. I mean, you don't get guarantees with weather. I mean, when they get to Pebble Beach for the U.S. Open, that's maybe as close as you get to having a guaranteed no rain, because it doesn't typically rain out there at that time of the year. But, you know, I think the broad view, this is absolutely the best thing for the tour and for golf. And I think for interest, I think it's, you know, I think fans are going to like it. And, you know, Jay Monahan was talking earlier this week, said, you know, there's a the reality was we wanted to get away from football and have a chance to showcase our big events the way we're doing it, and it's taken some, you know, reconfiguring of the schedule, and it will still take a little bit of time, I think, to sort out what who's going to play where and when. And, you know, we'll see next week at Valspar whether they have the kind of feel they want. Obviously, Hanna didn't, but I just think it's all for the good.
Thank you for bringing up Jay Monahan. How is he viewed, do you think, as a whole, by the players at this point so early in his tenure as a commissioner? Because he's having to deal with a lot of really difficult things, major schedule changes, major rule changes. There's a lot on his plate early.
Oh, I think they like him. I think they're hugely supportive. I like that he sent out the memo a week or two ago about to the players about basically about all the barking they were, some of them were doing about the rules, and basically reiterated, says, you know, fellas, we made the rules with them. It's not like they made the rules and handed them down to us. We were at the table for all 6 years, and they took virtually every recommendation we made, and they implemented them. They listened to us, and we helped decide what we're doing. And so be quiet, and we're not going to change them. These are our rules. We're going to play by them. And I love that he said, no, we're not going to have our own set of tour rules, which they shouldn't. That would be an unfortunate thing. So, yeah, they're, you know, he said, if you change 50 things, some of them are going to have some wrinkles that you need to work through. Now, whether they will adjust the flag stick rule, which I thought they might at one point, now I see no chance they're going to do that, or the drop rule, I think they just needed to work past it and get used to it. And I think hopefully we're through most of that noise, but we'll see.
Ron Green Jr. is with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. I want to ask you a couple things about the course, and then specifically something you wrote about, like Muirfield Village with Jack, like Bay Hill was with Arnold, of course, Augusta National. It seems that there is tinkering that goes on with this golf course each and every year. I will admit that a couple of years ago when the change was made and 12 was made into a quote-unquote drivable par 4, I hated what they did with it, and I think I hated it maybe because of the time of year, like you said, they couldn't grow in the Bermuda, and it just seemed that balls were bouncing all over the place. My view, having watched early round coverage this year, is I really enjoy that 12th hole now. I think this time of year, it's perfect.
Yeah, and I think, again, if you get the north wind, I think it takes the drivable part out of it in some ways. I think, I want to say somebody was saying they hit 6-iron wedge there is what they've decided to do. But it's in vogue, too, the drivable par 4, which is something you want. It was pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? Pretty harsh. Either you did it or you didn't do it and got into big trouble if you tried it before. I think that's been softened a little bit. And, yeah, these golf courses are so familiar that when you make changes like that, it's a little unsettling in places. But I think, I mean, this is a really, they've always sort of had a progressive look with this golf course, and to stay proactive in how they want to set it up and play it. And I think if you go back to whenever it opened 30-plus years ago, the players really hated it because it was so new, so different, so provocative. But now it doesn't fit everybody. But the best thing, two great things can be said about this. A, it's instantly recognizable and draws eyes when they play the tournament here. And if you go in search of a pattern of the kind of player who wins this tournament, you can't find one because it's open to anybody.
Ron, it's famous for its finish, 16, 17, and 18. Risk-reward, par 5, the famous Island Green 17th, and the 18th hole, which you wrote about this week and we'll get to in a second. All three, water is a major component and comes into play. It's arguably the most recognizable and exciting finish in golf. I just was sitting here making notes. I can think the 17th and 18th at the Old Course, 17 and 18 at Pebble. Of course, we have the Green Mile. Somebody named it the Green Mile. I can't remember who. Here at Quail Hollow Club. In your opinion, is it the best finish all the way around, not just for the players, but for the fans in golf?
Well, I think it was designed to be just a dynamic stage, and I think you could stack it up there. If you said that's the best one, you wouldn't get you might get people to argue with you, but they would understand your point. It's great. I mean, the 16 gives you that tease. If you want to go for it and can hit the shots, you can make a 3 here. And 17, particularly when the wind blows, just throws everybody. You just sort of hold your breath watching that shot. And then 18, I mean, you just go stand on that 18th tee. And for somebody who has hit the ball right to left throughout my life. It's like, oh my gosh, there's nothing out there but a lake. I mean, you could ski on it, but it's perfect for what they want, and it makes players stand up and hit really, really hard shots and earn it. I mean, you don't back into it. Now, you get a guy like Ricky Fowler gets going like he did a few years ago, and he won. I mean, that's just, you know, transcendent sort of spell of golf he had there. But, you know, you know Craig Perks, of all people, did it, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But the other times, you know, we all know Lenny Matisse. Adam Scott chunked it in the water when he was trying to win here, managed to still win. It brings calamity right into play, you know, on all three of those holes. And that's what you want. I mean, if it ultimately is as much a TV show as a competition, then this is pretty good reality TV.
Get you out of here on this. You wrote about the 18th hole, and it to me is one of the most fascinating mental holes in all of professional golf. I'm reminded when I look at it of the 18th hole at where they've played the Houston Open the last 15 to 20 years. There's several holes at Bay Hill that look like this. It is the you cannot go left or you will be swimming tee shot, and it amazes me. These are the greatest golfers in the world, the greatest ball strikers in the world. And you see so many of them, Ron, just bail outright. It's like a club golfer just chickening out and bailing right. It's incredible to me how many do that.
Yeah, well, you can play from the right side, but unless you have scuba gear, you can't play from the left side. You know, and that's the thing about that hole. I mean, you know all that water's out there, but about 280 off the tee down to about 330, 350, there's a whole stand of trees right there. So if you run it through the fairway, if you're lucky, you've got a little alleyway you can hit it through. But there's more times than not, you're probably looking to play something short of the green or out sideways there. So it doesn't give you any bailout, even on the second shot. There's obviously no left side there. And the right side of the 18th green, I mean, just, you know, it's just like big pits and hills, and just it's a double bogey waiting to happen, too.
Ron, over the weekend, the weather is going to come in terms of the wind, and that's what that golf course, it really makes it, is the wind. Knowing that, is there a number that you would take and post right now on Sunday, maybe 12-under, 13-under, and take your chances?
That sounds pretty good because, you know, I go back to the year, what was it, 20 years ago, David Duval won, and they were playing in March, and he shot something like 69-69. In good conditions, and the weather changed, and he, I think he shot 73-74 on the weekend to win. Tiger shot 75-75 on the weekend and moved up. So that's what could happen. So I think wherever you are on Friday night, that leading score, I think something very close to that, and my guess is it's going to be around 10 under par. Something close to that will probably look really good by Sunday afternoon.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, that's our friend Ron Green Jr. And up next, freelance writer Ron Mintz continues to take dead aim at the TPC. Presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Ron Mintz is a freelance golf writer based out of Greensboro, whose work can be found in the pages of the Sporting News, Fansided.com, and many others. Ron, let's begin by talking about a couple of individual players before we get into the TPC itself. One being Tiger Woods. I don't know about you, but last week, when he pulled out of Bay Hill, which I would have thought there's no way in hell he pulls out of a place like Bay Hill where he's won eight times, due to neck pain. The way I look at it, I think of an old song, you know, the neck bone's connected to the backbone and all of that. I was like, uh-oh, here it is. Here's the beginning of the end. Apparently, apparently it wasn't. It was just as he said, you know, some soreness. And due to the fact that he's a basic walking medical miracle, I guess we're going to have to expect that from time to time.
Yeah, I think one thing, Tiger is very honest now with the media and fans. I mean, he always hid his ailments in the past, but now he's very open about them. And having had neck surgery, you're right, they all are connected. And as he explained, when his back was fused, which was the last hope he had, that was, you know, there could be no more they could do for him. It really limited the motion from his lower back. And he said that the stress has got to be absorbed somewhere. And when you swing now, or now when he swings, it's a lot of it's absorbed by his neck. Now, I'm not a doctor, but it makes common sense to me. So I think he's correct.
Speaking of Tiger Woods' swing, as we're recording this, we're in the second round of the TPC. And Tiger, except for a quadruple bogey on the Island Green 17th at Sawgrass on Friday, every swing that I've seen him make looks solid. It looks purposeful. It looks on balance. And I think that last part is the key to me. It seems for many years it looked like Tiger was swinging almost wildly out of control at times. But now it's just this beautiful, controlled, rhythmic swing. And if you're a Tiger Woods fan, there's a lot to look forward to.
Well, I'm very impressed. And I think the fact that he can play it all is a miracle. So everything else is just icing on the cake. Hearing some of the commentators last night picking apart his swing, you know, they found some flaws in it, but I look at the positive. Yeah, he had a couple wayward drives, but Tiger always has.
Well, and everybody does at that golf course, because so much of that golf course, you've got to maneuver your ball both ways. And look, golf is hard, even for the best in the world. And I'm seeing guys on that 14th hole and guys on that 18th hole bail out right every time. And, you know, everybody's going to hit some bad drives. I don't care who you are.
Well, that's what they were saying yesterday. The Tiger just doesn't have that shot where he can avoid the left side. He's got to develop that again. He used to have it. But then they turn around and say he needs to develop a good draw for the dogleg left holes. So I don't know. I think if he just hit it straight, that might be the key.
I don't think anyone who's ever hit it straight has ever gone wrong, to be honest with you. Freelance golf writer Ron Mintz is our guest taking Dead Aim. Another player I want to talk about, and we've talked about this guy privately off air. My God, Jordan Spieth, I just can't remember. Maybe David Duval is the last time I saw something like this, where there was a player who was so good and then has appeared just to fall down a rabbit hole. This is a guy that 2 years ago, we're talking about, you know, he could be one of the greatest of all time, that he could get to double-digit major championship wins. Right now, I'm not so confident that Jordan Spieth can make the cut in half the tournaments he enters.
Well, I looked at the stat yesterday, which shocked me, that he's not finished better than tied for 35th, which was the Farmers Insurance Open, in seven starts this season. I mean, that's his best finish, and that's crazy. It's just he's fallen very fast and very hard.
What is your opinion? Because my son and I talk about this a lot, because he used to just love Jordan Spieth, and now he's really down on him, but he's a fickle teenager. But we both trace it back to the final round when Jordan was going after the Grand Slam, and he had just missed out on the Open Championship at St. Andrews, and he was in the final group on the final day at Whistling Straits with Jason Day. And you remember that week at Whistling Straits, Jason Day was hitting the ball in the center of the club face and literally hitting it into orbit, like the moon was in play with Jason Day and that driver. And Jordan was hitting it about 315, 320, but Day was hitting it 360. And it's almost as if Jordan got this in his head, I've got to start chasing distance.
And that was the moment where it just seemed to go south. I realize he won a major championship 2 years later, but it just seems that the moment Jordan started chasing distance, he lost that consistency that he had off the tee and then with the second shots. And it just seems like once he lost that, then the putter was soon to follow because he was putting so much pressure on his putter at that point.
Yeah, I remember that. I mean, he took the perfect game and started tinkering with it, which a lot of guys do. And here we are today. I think, as we talked before we went on the air, I think for some reason I just believe 99% of this is mental. But sometimes that's harder to fix than something that's technical. So I don't know, his caddy Michael Greller, who, you know, they're very close, but he's been openly talking about telling Jordan, look, just get up there and hit it like you used to and quit overthinking it, because he takes forever on his shots and he backs off and backs off. And that's a sign of a lack of confidence. So I think that's his major problem.
And you've got to be decisive there with every shot that you make in golf. You have to be decisive and 100% committed to it. And I see that too. He just never does. You're right. Ron Mintz, freelance golf writer, our guest taking dead aim. Let's talk about this tournament. And I am actually going to change my position this year, and I'm probably going to take some heat for some people from doing it. I have been against this golf course forever. I thought it was just contrived drama. The Masters, look, it's the same course year after year, just like this, but the Masters knows how to set up their course. Augusta National knows how to set it up on the weekends, and you're going to get organic drama every single year at Augusta National. And it seems that this course, to me, they always were tinkering with it, trying to create drama, trying to make those moments happen. And they didn't seem to happen in May. There's something about the way this course is set up, and people have said, look, it was intended to be played in March, but there's something about the way this course is set up with the overseed that has made me really, really start to appreciate it this year. I, for one, hated when they turned 12 from just a normal par 4 into, quote-unquote, a drivable par 4, because I thought it was a gimmick hole. However, now with the overseed, I really like the way it plays, and, you know, 16, 17, 18, maybe. Be, I can't believe I'm saying this, the best three-hole finish in golf. And the people at Quail are going to shoot me for saying that. But, you know, it just might be.
I agree with them. I couldn't really remember why they went to May.
Weather.
I think it had some.
It was weather. They had gotten burned about 4 or 5 years in a row, or maybe 4 out of 5 years, with just terrible torrential rains, and they were having trouble getting the tournament finished on time, and it was just a sloppy mess. And the players were like, let's move this thing, and they decided, you know, hey, look, if we move it to May, then we have the Masters, the Players, the U.S. Open, the Open Championship, and then the PGA, and then the playoffs. And then, of course, the Olympics happened, and then they wanted to, you know, get out of football's way. And so they were trying to figure out a way to, you know, get the PGA in earlier. And so it was logical to move it back to May, but, or back to March. But the original move was for weather.
Pete Dye, they've always said that this course was designed to be played, or this tournament was designed to be played in March, not May. And Rory McIlroy made a good comment yesterday. He said, look, in the past, I would have never hit driver on the holes I'm hitting driver on now, because you never knew how they would roll. The course was so hard and dry. The greens wouldn't hold them. He said, this week I'm able to hit driver and feel very comfortable with it. So I love it. He said, but on the other hand, you don't have to hit driver on a lot of holes. So it's not a bomber's course, although distance helps. It's just almost, it is a totally different course the way you described it, especially with overseed. And I think 99.9% of the players love it.
It's so green. Augusta National is going, damn, y'all look green on TV. I mean, it's unbelievable.
They said, I'd heard before it came on, that we're going to be shocked at how pretty it was on TV this year compared to May. Because in May it was, you know, in Florida in May.
Yeah, I mean, it had almost a U.S. Open look in May.
Yeah, it is very beautiful course. And yesterday, it sort of reminded me of Augusta with the wind swirling and the trees on the back nine. You couldn't really tell where the wind was coming from, and that added to some of the high scores in the afternoon. So I'm not comparing it to Augusta, but it had that feel watching it yesterday. So I like the change. I really do.
Freelance golf writer Ron Mintz is our guest taking Dead Aim. Let's talk about the finish a little bit. I was really starting to think about this, and I can think of a lot of good two-hole finishes. There's 17 and 18 at Pebble. There's 17 and 18 at the Old Course. Of course, here at Quail Hollow, we have the Green Mile, 16, 17, and 18. Great finishing holes. But you'd be hard-pressed, or am I just missing some? You'd be hard-pressed to find a great three-hole finish like you have at the Players. I mean, 16 is a very reachable par 5. Water is in play everywhere. The 17th, as like we mentioned earlier with Tiger, it'll bite you, even though it is just a dinky little shot. And then 18 scares the living daylights out of those guys with water all the way up the left side. It's really a fantastic finish.
No, it is. And I keep remembering, to me, it's the best playoff I've ever witnessed in golf. Was in 2015 with Garcia and Kisner and Fowler going into a playoff. And I think Sergio dropped out after one hole, but then he and Kisner played 17 and 18, and then they played it again. And it was like a duel because they were both, Kisner and Fowler, were not backing off. And on 17, they were flag hunting, and that pin was in that front right corner. And they were sticking it. I mean, they were at 5 feet, and it was come down to who could make the putt. And on the last playoff hole, Fowler made birdie, and Kisner just had his lip out. So it was just a remarkable playoff, and it's the best I've ever seen. So yeah, I agree with you. It couldn't be any better, especially when you got players like that. That Kisner and Fowler, when their game is on, I mean, Kisner doesn't have any fear at all. Ricky sometimes, I think, is not fear. He just doesn't concentrate. But that day, he had that look in his eyes. And it's the best playoff I've ever seen. So, yeah, I love this hole.
You know, it's funny you bring up that playoff. I had kind of forgotten how bulldog Kisner was. Kisner had a chance to win that tournament in regulation, and we're still trying to figure out why his putt didn't fall. It died on the lip to get in the playoff, and then he and Fowler both had a birdie in the three-hole aggregate. Sergio didn't, and he dropped out. Then Ricky goes back, you know, sticks it on 17, and people forget Kisner stuck it too. Fowler had a 5-footer, and Kisner just had 8 feet. They both, you're right, went flag hunting on that 17th, and Kisner didn't back down an inch, and, you know, he just didn't make the putt, and Fowler did.
You talk about a great shot. You know how hard it is to hold that green to start with, and especially that Sunday pin placement. It was just, it was classic golf. I can't describe it any other way. I loved it, and I've never forgotten about it.
They say that the winds are going to roll in a little bit heavier on the weekends, maybe gusting 15, 20 miles an hour, and it's the north wind. So, in other words, it'll be in your face on 17, in your face on 18, and across you on 16. That being said, and that'll really complicate the golf course, where do you see the winning score being? And I ask because the last 2 weeks, look, if Francesco Molinari doesn't go crazy on Sunday, we have two consecutive weeks on the PGA Tour with single-digit under-par winners. Do you think that could happen this week?
Oh, very, very much. I was looking at the average score over the last 24 years. And another ironic thing about playing in March is even though the Players love it, the winning score is one stroke less on average than playing in May. It's actually a tougher course scoring-wise. The average is about 11 under par, and versus May was around 12. But I've wondered all week if they would get to 10 because I knew the weather, I knew the wind was coming. And, of course, you know, yesterday they had the course set up pretty easy, but they can tighten this course up like a U.S. Open if they want to, not with the rough, but just with pin placements and stuff. So, yeah, I think we might see another one-digit score, but we'll just have to wait and see.
That's freelance golf writer Ron Mintz. I'd also like to thank Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, and John McGinnis of SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio and PGA Tour Live for their time and insight this week. A reminder, a great way to stay in the loop with us is to be a regular consumer of our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Currently featured articles on Francesco Molinari's most unique of winning Callaway golf clubs, Michelle Wee's engagement, and Tiger Woods' assessment of his own physical condition. Dr. Tiger. Weather-wise, well, hey, for the first time in forever, it looks like we may actually have spectacular conditions to tee it up and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart all weekend long. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.